cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel today is Safia Boulay of New Habits. Welcome, Safia.
Thank you.
In this first half hour, our business skills conversation is brought to you in association with USB Ed. Today's theme is partnerships, the good, the bad, the ugly. Joining us in studio is no stranger to the studio, Mark Peters. Thank you, Mark, for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
Mark is a faculty member at USB Ed and runs his own business as an independent strategy facilitator who assists companies develop and meet their strategic objectives. He also teaches marketing and strategy at a number of local and international business schools, so is well-versed to join us on the subject. So, Mark, that world of the partnership. When I say the good, the bad, the ugly, everybody gives it a good laugh. But the reality is the world of partnerships is fraught with great opportunities and yet many pitfalls. And we thought today we would spend a little bit of time discussing some of the advantages, some of the disadvantages, and kind of the things to look out for. So it's going to be a little bit of a banter, backwards and forwards conversation between the panel here today. So maybe let's just start with the question of, well, what is a partnership? How do we define a partnership? There's so many different types of partnership in the world. What is a business partnership? Let's just get that definition out there.
So arguably, other than a sole proprietor that you're working on your own, it is the single biggest business entity, business structure in South Africa and probably arguably the world. And a partnership is where a group of people in South Africa, it's a maximum of 20. So that's legislated for. It's 20. And it's where people who have a common objective or objectives get together, whether it is a partnership in a medical practice, whether it's a partnership in a consultancy, and you trade in under the name that you've chosen as your partnership. But it is arguably the second biggest entity structure in the world. And if you speak to the banks, they'll tell you that. If you look at the registration in the South African world, partnerships are absolutely a way forward. And as you've rightly said, good, bad, and ugly, the advantages and disadvantages, and we got to go in with our eyes wide open.
Mm. Now, I mean, for me, the logical point when we say the word partnership, I think, great. That means I get to work with somebody else or a group of others and pull together and pool our resources, and the sum of the parts is better, is bigger than...
Yeah, in theory is better than the individuals.
Yeah. So that's all fine and well in theory. But practically, how does a partnership... I mean, look, so I would suppose we start this off with, and Safia's got a legal background, so she'll tell me all about this whole concept of, let's call it a partnership agreement. And, yeah. and it's not just about the legals, it's about just, maybe you started off with a, let's call it a memorandum of understanding of just how we're going to make this thing work, how we're going to work with each other. What have you seen in your experience, Safia, in this world of people just connecting with each other and wishing to work together? And I guess by default, the moment two people get together and agree to work together, suddenly a partnership is in play. Whether you formalize it or not, it is a partnership of some format, so to speak. What have you seen in your experience out there with people, and what have they done?
So, Richard, partnerships are like marriages.
Here we go.
A marriage where one partner is always right and the other person is the husband. That one.
Pretty much.
I've told that joke before, Sophia.
I know. So partnership is very much like marriage. And while on the surface you have this business arrangement that people are getting together for, there are the interpersonal things that come into play, the conversations that we don't have, and very often the conversations we don't have overshadow the conversations that we do have. And so from my perspective, I've seen people with enormous and awesome legals in place, but because they're not dealing with the interpersonal things, the partnership doesn't do as well as it could.
Okay, so there's an important learning that I'm hearing there, and it's a critical thing, is that no amount of legal documentation is going to actually make your partnership work. It's actually about working with each other and having a, let me call it the connection with each other. And I know the days of, let's call it, we work on a gentleman's handshake or yeah. a handshake between two parties. I think that scenario is long gone. I think we've all realized that that's not a way that the modern
it's not
world,
enough.
It's yeah, not enough in the modern yeah. world. But what I'm hearing is if you don't have that, even if you've got the legals in place, it's also not going to be a success. So it's a case of you need both, and I would hazard to guess and would put it out there that you want to get the first that connection and that relationship to work first, and then you make sure that you document and make a robust set of legals that support your arrangement that you've agreed on.
Yeah.
You know, so don't try and do it the other way around. Rather make sure that you understand each other, you know, where you're, what you're working on and how you're going to work together, and then put that and document that.
Yeah, and Richard, that's quite hard, I think, because, you know, it's at the early stages. We're agreeing to date using your analogy, and then, you know, we need to understand what our strengths and weaknesses are. There's no point, for instance, all of us having the same strengths in a partnership and a whole load of blank areas like nobody doing good admin, no finance person, no legal skills. So the partnership also needs to be the balance, because we can't all want to be the CEO of the partnership, although in a South African partnership, in theory, there's no CEO, but we like to call it the managing partner. The one thing that I have found works well when you have those ground rules is that you seem to have greater credibility than somebody working on their own. So I've been in a partnership and it seemed we had greater gravitas, credibility, that there were a few of us in it. Whereas if you're a sole proprietor, you don't seem to have that. I don't know if Sophia would agree to that.
So from my perspective, it's like a relationship. A relationship requires constant, ongoing work. And if the partnership requires different people to stand in the forefront from time to time to achieve different things, then the partnership, the dynamic in the partnership needs to create the space for that to happen. And that requires that partners don't only work on the business and in the business, but also requires that they work on their relationship as well. Because you can have the most amazing opportunity and you can co-create amazing things, but if you can't work with each other, you can't deliver it to your market. And the thing about a partnership is, because of the foreseeable lifetime of the partnership being indefinite, you've got to know how to create the space for each other to stand in the front and to stand at the back, so that you deliver what you've undertaken to deliver.
Yeah, I think I guess what I'm hearing is the knowing who's leading and who's following, and the fact that those roles can change
all the time
and quite quickly. And the most successful partnerships, from what I've observed, are ones where people are truly partners, and partners imply that there's not one better than the other, and we just go with the flow, work with what needs to be done, know each other's strengths and weaknesses. And when somebody's got a weakness, you don't focus on it. You focus on who's got the strength to close that gap, and you move on.
Respect for each other's knowledge and skills, and that the knowledge and skills are complementary of each other, rather than all doing the same thing, I think, yeah. So what you're implying by having that ability, if I could just give one example that happened to me very recently. I was working with a motor dealership that shall remain nameless, but quite large, and it was a brother and sister, and the brother and sister had fallen out 6 years ago, and they were running a multi-million rand business. They had agreed to run separate parts of the business, so they didn't really need to talk to each other, but the amount of opportunity they were missing, where both parts of the business need to come together, they were treating them as separate. And so working with siblings can also have as we do in marriage, where we agree have to have no-go areas. Let's not talk about the family, for example. But it's a balance of the knowledge and skill for me.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, some of the things, my experiences in that line, and you've cited one there, is that people must not make the assumption that because we're friends, or because we've worked together before, or because we're related, that we will make great partners in a business. And in fact, previous relationships actually cloud a partnership arrangement, in my experience. Some of the best partnerships have been created with two or three or however many people who don't even know each other.
Yeah.
And they come across each other, they connect, and they go, okay, we can work together. And it's, let's call it a clean relationship slate.
Yeah.
And yes, the most complex of partnership environments often are, you know, the husband and wife, the father and son, the you know, the siblings together, the three brothers together, the likes. You know, this can be really, really, really complex from a business.
Very hard to fire your brother and sister from a business.
Added
dynamic. Having said that, I like your analogy of the clean slate, Richard. But having said that, you know, having an understanding and having met people before and understanding what their strengths and weaknesses before you get in is a big. No point in finding it out later on, and now we've invested knowledge and capital into our business, and suddenly we realize. I had one quite recently where the relationship broke down because one of the partners didn't want to work on a Saturday. Now it would be hell of a useful to know that beforehand if Saturday was your busiest day in your business, and you're saying that on religious grounds I don't want to do that. Understandable, but you should have known that before you went into the business, I think. So, you know, getting those surprises are hectic. I remember being involved in a partnership where it was just office rental, so it wasn't terribly complex. And when we went to sign the papers, the guy, my partner, tells me, no, I'm insolvent, so my wife will be the partner on this one. We should have known that before you get into it. So that was my fault. I didn't know, but also my partner never told me he's insolvent.
Mm.
Because one of the challenges we face in partnerships, and you see it creeping in a lot, and I'd love Sophia's comment on it as well, is the concept of mutual mandate, where people in a partnership can enter into agreement for all partners, and you can be held liable for that. It's quite unusual. In a sole proprietor, we don't have that. If I make the arrangements, it's me. But I can go into a partnership with Sophia, sign a contract outside of this, and she's bound by it, provided it was a legal document that I signed.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
Yeah, have you come across that?
I have, and they work exceptionally well in partnerships or businesses where there's incredible amounts of trust, respect and understanding.
Or a mandate, up to what level we could sign things. Yeah.
Yeah. But when trust is absent from the partnership, I can't see that serving the partners nor the partnership.
Not at all, yeah.
And definitely not the creditors that come up.
No, no. And if that happens, frankly, you have no trust. If you see that to the listeners, if they see that happening in their business where you think, oh, that person shouldn't have done that, you really need to deal with that up front.
Yeah.
Because that's an example of what Sophia Richard spoke about earlier on, not having those open, honest conversations. And it starts to burn us a little bit that we should have talked about it, like in a marriage. We should have chatted about that. We didn't. It happens again, but now it's a bigger issue. But in this case, the partnership could be held liable for the actions of one of the parties, and I didn't have anything done. I didn't agree to it, but you're still liable.
Yeah.
And joint and severally, you two are ex-bankers. I shouldn't say that to your listeners, because straight away they've got perceptions.
I was going to say, I think the reality is, as a person with a potential partnership on the table, you need to realize that because of that intricacy of joint and several liability across the partnership, that's why people like the banks, for example, will insist that they see all partners being in agreement on a particular contract or issue.
Absolutely.
So if you've got four partners in a business,
the bank will want to see all of them.
Be ready for the request for all four to present themselves for any engagement or any legal engagement, and unless you've been very, very clear around what your mandates are and you have resolutions that support those mandates, the reality is that you're probably going to find yourself having to have everybody appear simultaneously.
Absolutely.
For anything that needs to be agreed. I mean, obviously, a lot of the bigger creditors will just simply say, we're not prepared to take the risk on a joint and several liability, somebody saying, I didn't know, so they'll want everybody present. And that can be a little bit of a downside, particularly if you're not all in one place. place, if you've got a business that's operating across a region, internationally, whatever it is. I mean, imagine if you've got a partnership where you've got presence in South Africa and the USA. Now you've got to have people flying backwards and forwards every time you want to sign a bank document. Yeah. This just does not make sense.
I'd be interested, Richard, if I may, following on from that, to hear Safia's view on that joint and severally liable, because I think that in reality, a lot of South Africans don't fully understand that if I don't have any assets and Safia does, she's the one that the bank is going to come after. And no memorandums of understanding are going to protect you from the bank coming after your partnership. I'd be interested in your view or maybe experience from your days in the bank on that.
So that's a long time ago.
Is it? Not that long, right?
But a partnership is basically, everyone is going to be affected because of the joint and several liability in the partnership. So every single member of that partnership or partner to that partnership is going to be affected. And so there's a great duty of care between the partners in terms of binding them to third parties.
Yeah, to take reasonable care. But the reality is, Safia, you're a woman of means, wealthy lady, and I've got nothing. They're going to come after you. They're going to say it's not worth their while going after Mark Peters, and Richard owes more money on his car than anyone else. So they're going to look at your balance sheet. I mean, and they do that a lot.
I agree with you, but they are going to take legal action against you as well.
Of course.
And the consequences for you in the long run, when one day you are a man of great means,
I hope.
Yeah. It's going to catch up with you. So in the short term, yes. But in the long term, the consequences are joint and several.
Yeah, sure.
And I think the whole important thing to realize is that just because a creditor chooses to pursue one particular party does not mean that that particular party does not have a claim against you. So I'm going to go back to your example, and Safia in business, in a partnership together. We decide we're proceeding against Safia because she's got an asset base that we can realize. However, she's got a claim against you, Mark, in terms of your partnership agreement, in terms of your obligations. So you don't sidestep anything. And the reality is, the legal process for when it goes pear-shaped and things get nasty, the reality is they love, the first defendant, the second defendant, the third defendant, the fourth. And they can just keep on adding the list from the partnership as defendants. So they, anybody who's seeking to recover for any obligations, whilst a partnership does create some nuances and there's an element of legal issues around it, the reality is they actually get the opportunity to go against every single member of that partnership. Yeah. That space is really challenging. Now, some of the other, let's call it issues that you have to consider, there's positives and negatives to all of them, is, from a partnership perspective, the whole concept of we pool our resources, we pool our way of doing business, that's a really nice way of, taking an environment where perhaps you don't have enough to do this on your own as a sole proprietor.
One of the big advantages.
But you can really pull together with everybody else. And for me, that's something great in the South African context, is that you can take people that have perhaps small means, get together as a group and create something of substantial means that actually can make a difference and deliver on an expectation, deliver to a market, pull a product through from concept through to, end point and actually deliver to a market new products, whatever it may be. Now, obviously, when you're doing this in a partnership, it's really important to make sure that you all know what the roles are, as we've talked about, because it doesn't help to have everybody great at designing and conceptualizing and creating and producing, but nobody can sell it or invoice it and collect it.
And that example is true in a lot of places, Richard, if I may say. That's my experience, is you have great ideas, but there isn't a person who can sell it. Safia and I were chatting about a business that we know quite well, and I'm not sure that the principals are very good at selling it. It's quite a bit woolly. So it's a great example that everybody really wants to be the doing, but the reality, the hard nose where it hits, the rubber hits the road on let's get the revenue. People are not so keen on that, I think. We'll be back in the office and deal with it. Mm. And I am pleased you're going there, Richard, because I think we may have given your listeners a view that this is quite a negative thing to do because we got onto that joint and severally. But the reality is a group of partners who are compatible, who have respect, as Sophia mentions, with each other, who have a shared knowledge, skills that complement each other, are more likely to be much more successful than if you tried to do it on your own. Mm. And it's that balance that I think we, all three of us are alluding to. You get that right and you could have a partnership running for a long time. Mm. And before the show closes, Richard, I do think the three of us should have a brief discussion on dissolution and how partnerships collapse and things like that. But yeah. I think we need to give your listeners the view that actually partnerships can be hugely successful if we have a mutual understanding of what we're getting involved in. Okay. You know, somebody who says to you after 2 years together, I'm now going to go off and pursue my own and find myself in the Himalayan mountains and you're left running the business, you might find that that's not working so well.
Mm, exactly. Okay, we'll get to the dissolution in a moment. If I can just ask both of you to just maybe two or three things that you think are critical around a partnership environment that you would want to see in place or that you think about when I mention the word partnership. Mark, perhaps if we can start with you. What are the...
I was hoping you'd go ladies first.
What are, maybe
I
one
need
or
time
two,
to think.
One or two things.
Okay. I like the summary of how Sophia started out. I think the issue of trust, if that's not there, don't do it. If you're nervous about it, rather postpone. Mm-hmm. Respect for each other, that I respect the skills that you have, Richard, but it must be mutual. You must also respect for, and that we're equal in this, and communication. We're not talking to each other and really communicating about having, you know, 5 minutes over the water cooler on a Monday morning. This is really important. And those who've got the skills, Sophia and I were chatting outside about dialogue, for instance, you know, having real, I think the term she used was powerful conversations, but calling your partners out rather than waiting. We tend to do that as South Africans quite a bit, the sort of passive aggressive, well, I don't really want to deal with you. And yeah, so those would be my three: trust, respect, communication.
Sophia? Can you start on all mine?
No.
Where do I complain?
I've got a list here.
File a complaint.
So for me, I agree with everything Mark has contributed. But in addition to that, I'd also like to add that inside of communication, it's about communicating as partners in running the business today and also as partners running the business within their own specializations and their contributions to the business. And then it's also about partners creating common purpose around what they want to see for their partnership over the years and the months to come, because very often we get so consumed in the business that we are running today that we forget to prepare for what is to come. Yeah. And for what we must create. So it's about creating. One of the big things that I would like to see partnerships and small businesses do exactly as big corporates do is to create the space and the time for themselves to really, really dream about what they can be and to put actions in motion so that they can achieve those kinds of results for them and become big corporates one day.
Yeah, I often think that we are so busy looking out the rearview mirror than at what has gone on and what has gone wrong that we don't really say, let's look forward. I mean, Edward de Bono made the statement, you can analyze the past, but you have to design the future.
Exactly.
I mean, that's such a powerful statement.
One quick one, also a bit trite, I think, but just quick one. I think one of the dangers we have with partnerships is that we confuse motion with progress. And building on Sophia's issue, we're running around with our day-to-day stuff and we're not taking the time that she speaks about to think strategically on where we're going. One fast example for the listeners, Richard, is that I'm working with a construction company. Two of the partners are 60, one is 75. No succession plan. They've never talked about it. The 75-year-old says, I don't want to do this anymore. And suddenly they're now thinking about, well, how do we manage? Can we afford to buy them out? They've never thought about it. Why? Because it's gone quite quite well, not very well, but it's gone quite well the last 15 or 16 years. Mm. But because there's an age gap or somebody with different objectives, it doesn't have to be an age, sex, race issue. It can be just somebody with a different set of objectives said, I've made the money I wanted. I now want to go and live at the coast. Suddenly you have to rethink what it is that you're doing in the business.
Okay, so let's close with that, this thought around partnership and partnership dissolution, because let's realize that unlike an incorporated company, a partnership is a collection of individuals. The moment one of those individuals dies or needs to leave the partnership is actually dissolved, effectively yeah. dissolved.
So it's more than effectively in law, it's dissolved. Yeah. You have to reconfigure it with the new. Maybe it's just the existing partners, but you have to reconfigure
you
it
You have
again.
To reconfigure. Now, how do you deal with that dissolution process, Mark? I mean, what's your experience there? Painful.
Yeah. And I don't think, and Sophia has got experience from her legal background, but just one sentence on it very quickly is to say, I don't think there's a set of rules for that, because each one that dissolves will be different. And the question is, do we want to continue? Do we want to bring another partner in? And they have to agree. It's quite painful when the death you mention, but where somebody decides they want to do something else, you have a successful business and they're a linchpin in the business. And now they've decided, you know, I only want to work part time. I don't want to work full time. I want to spend time with my kids, or I want to go and visit my grandchildren in Australia. And suddenly the world changes. So I don't think there's a blueprint for that, but it's back to Sophia's comment on let's have that conversation. I don't think we do a good job of that. I think we've great partnerships in South Africa, but I don't think we do a good job on that planning.
Yeah. Sophia, thoughts there on the dissolution?
For me, that's a living conversation that should happen on an ongoing basis in the partnership. And for as long as the partnership is alive, that is for as long as the conversation should be going. Because even if you decide to bring a new partner in, is that new partner compatible with the business and the culture and the expertise that's already in the existing partnership? And if you're not alive to the issue of who you want to bring in and what kind of person, not just what kind of expertise, but what kind of person is best going to serve your partnership agenda, if you're thinking about that at the 13th hour, it's too late. Mm. And so there's a process that I'm familiar with called the partnership charter process, in which that is a living process that a partnership can go through on an annual basis, and they can create those kinds of results for them to say, so this is how we onboard a new partner, and this is the criteria for a new partner, and this is how we exit an existing partner. And it's not done in a legal way, it's done in a human way that creates, an ongoing conversation.
Well, that's a great idea. So that would be called a partnership charter.
Yeah, it's a well-documented process out there. It's not a legal process. It's a facilitated process if you need it to be, but it's the kind of process that puts you in the driving seat of what happens to your partnership at times that are challenging.
One last comment, Richard, just to say to you, I think that the biggest issue, the dissolution that we're talking about, is what happens to the partnership property. The intellectual property, the capital, the skills, where do they go? And so the partnership charter, I guess, deals with that.
Yeah, and knows where, and you know where to put it.
And it's important to have those conversations when people are not charged. Because when people are charged and you have conversations like that, it normally ends up with everyone losing out.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you for your time today. We really appreciate your thoughts. Sophia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
Next up, we're going to get a little bit more practical with our SME development conversation. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.